News Radio Studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Brian Kilmeade here. Thanks so much for listening. We have a busy show. This hour, Carlos Shimkus is going to come up and ride all the news with us. And Jason Miller, the senior advisor to President Trump, will be joining us in a matter of moments. And keep in mind, too, if you ever leave your local affiliate and want to watch the show, you literally watch, go to the Fox News app, click on watch, and just page over until you see Fox News Radio. And then it'll be there in front of you, and you get the podcast at any time. So before we get to Jason, as I welcome you to this Thursday, let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's big three.
Number three. I don't think this ruling changes the type of evidence that the DA is going to be able to introduce, but it does knock out some of the charges. And look, it's embarrassing for prosecutors. It's a screw up by prosecutors when you bring a charge and then a judge throws it out before it even goes to trial.
That, believe it or not, was Eli Honig on CNN. Trump trials. Former President Trump is in court today in an effort to toss the documents case while he gets good news from a Georgia judge who tosses three of his 13 charges against him. So it's down to 10. Could Fani Willis and Nathan Wade be the next to go? Let's hope.
Number two.
I know this sounds like hyperbole, but it's all in your hands. And you folks like you all across the country. A lot of you helped me in 2020, and we make sure he was a loser. And we're going to make sure that happens again.
Well, the president is out and about. He's not hiding in the basement. President Biden touring battleground states, sitting for interviews, knowing he has ground to make up on President Trump. While polls show he gets zero bump from his State of the Union, and friction grows between his campaign team and his White House team.
Number one.
This will heavily influence on how I vote from today and for the rest of my life.
There are probably better matters out there right now than to be looking at, like, if we should vote for banning TikTok or not.
Try and talk to young people, like, in their districts or in their states.
Probably one of the top issues when it comes to Chinese espionage. TikTok on life support in America, as the Senate is getting pressured to follow the House and put its for sale and eventual ban up for a vote. Some in America are going to bat for the most popular app in the nation, casting aside American security and the threat of the Chinese government. We will discuss the hottest issues in the nation. Jason Miller joins us now. Jason, thanks for calling.
Brian, great to be with you. You know, I was thinking about your hours on television, then you have hours on the radio. Could you imagine Joe Biden trying to do like a fraction of that? Anyways, it got me thinking.
But I don't know how you. Well, that's one of the reasons why I wanted to call you guys today. Are you surprised that since the State of the Union, he has been out in the battleground states? He was in Michigan, Minneapolis, going to Pennsylvania. Does that change your strategy?
Doesn't change our strategy, but I like it. And I'm going to tell you why. We saw with the State of the Union last week that they can get Joe ready. I don't know exactly how they get him ready. But on the rare occasion, he can stay up past 9 p.m. He can deliver a speech. And I think many in the mainstream media gave him a bit of a participation trophy just because he stayed awake one night. He's going to get good polling. As you pointed out a moment ago, he got zero polling bump. But what happens, Brian, is then when he doesn't have the big event to get ready for, whether it be Friday in Pennsylvania when he asked people to send him to Congress, or he continues to say the goofy things or apologize to the illegal aliens who killed Lake and Riley or these other things, he goes off script, off message. So I like Biden being back out there. We're going to be aggressive with President Trump and with all these battleground states. But the getting Joe Biden out there more is great because the side-by-side of the two is always going to look better for President Trump.
What is the president's and your thoughts, the Trump team's thoughts about Robert Hur's testimony? I mean, I found it riveting. I can imagine what you guys were thinking as we went over his very thorough report that had instances dating back to the 70s of him taking classified information. I mean, that's the story. The competence started overwhelming the story. But his actions over the course of 40 years, I found the bigger story. What about you guys?
Well, you're exactly right. And there are a lot of instances, even from that report, that have never really had the deep dive, such as Biden moving some of those boxes himself, or the fact that he took things out of a Senate skiff. that this dates back a half a century. And also, as you think about the same time, Brian, Biden Inc., the family business, has been going for a half a century. The fact that Joe Biden just blatantly said that he was keeping some of these classified documents so he can go write his book on the $8 million book deal. But as we kind of take a step back from this, and I know we as people who observe politics and watch have a tendency to look at kind of the scandalous points, I'm more concerned about why this is even happening to President Trump. How do we see exactly what Joe Biden did? Nothing happens to Biden because essentially they feel sorry for him because he's kind of like a grandpa or something, or someone who's not able to cognitively withstand some sort of trial and be sympathetic. But just because President Trump is strong, then he gets the book thrown at him. And I think it's really disgusting how we have kind of this two-track, two-tier system of justice in the U.S.
So the fact is they are going out there and trying to get that uncommitted vote, which was a protest, we understand, about the president backing the Israel in the war in Gaza. And he's trying to do that in Minneapolis as well. As I mentioned to the president, he's actually tougher on the Palestinians and Hamas in his policies than President Biden. So is his best strategy to lay out and let them fight it out?
Well, no, actually, this is one of the things we've discussed where we want to go and try to get all Americans on board with President Trump. And keep in mind, Brian, when I mentioned a moment ago that we like it when Biden is out there on the trail, I should have gone a little bit deeper. The reason why I like it is because Biden fundamentally can't do anything to change his position or direction. So whether it's going to Michigan, he's still going to wholeheartedly be on board with his insane electric vehicle mandate, which is going to cost people in the state, auto workers, their jobs. When you look to the Middle East, Biden's not going to alter anything with his position. And so he's going to continue to find a way to unite Jewish Americans and Arab Americans, basically in their hatred towards Joe Biden because he's messed things up. And the silver bullet here for President Trump is he can point back to 4 years of peace and prosperity. And that's that sense of stability that he can return both here at home and on the global stage is going to be one of the main differentials this fall.
So Ken Thomas with The Wall Street Journal, does the White House beat, noted that the Teamsters have not endorsed anyone yet and that you guys seem to be going for that vote. Cut 30.
The Teamsters have had a really open process through this campaign. They met recently with former President Trump. They have met with some of the other candidates in the field. And, they sat down with President Biden in private yesterday. I was at the meeting afterwards and spoke to Sean O'Brien, the union president. And he said, look, they have to follow their process. They are going to poll their members, but don't look for an endorsement anytime soon. They have in the past traditionally endorsed after the summer conventions in August. And I think that's the timetable that they're looking at as well. I think within labor circles, most people expect the Teamsters to ultimately endorse President Biden here. But, the fact that they are showing an openness, creates this potential coup for former President Trump if he were able to secure their endorsement.
So that's interesting. So I was wondering if you could tell us how that meeting went and what is the president's pitch to unions?
Well, it was a fascinating meeting that I had the opportunity to be in with President Trump. And his pitch is that I'm going to save your jobs. I'm going to make sure that they're not sent overseas or that Biden doesn't find a way to drive them out of existence because of his kowtowing to the radical left, whether it be the environmentalists or people who just want to go and get rid of American jobs overall. I disagree with the clip that you played in so much as I think there's a real chance that President Trump can get the endorsement of the Teamsters later this year. And that's because the Teamsters know that the majority of their rank-and-file membership actually support President Trump. Brian, if we take a look back to 2016, President Trump only lost the union vote by roughly 8 or 9 points to Crooked Hillary. That was the closest that any Republican had come in about 40 years. Going back to, I think, Reagan 1980, as far as strength of a Republican with a union vote. Joe Biden obviously won it, the group, by double digits in 2020. Right now, it's almost a jump ball. I think that President Trump has a real chance to do just as well, if not even possibly better, with a union vote than Joe Biden in 2024, because, the wheels are coming off the bus for Biden.
All right. A couple of things. If I look at the latest Fox News poll, here's where you guys are trailing. With non-white voters, 64-31. Whites with a degree, 57-39. Suburban women, 57-40. Ages 65 and up, it's 50-45. Those are the four categories in which Joe Biden leads. I'm sure you look at the numbers, and they might even get, obviously, they probably dig into more detail. Is there a game plan for the college-educated, the suburban women? Has there been extensive study on 2020 and where you think you can make up the most ground?
Absolutely. And I point to, particularly with the first group that you mentioned, safety and security, I think is really going to be a driving issue. The whole matter of migrant crime, which you guys have done a fantastic job covering both on the TV show and on the radio show, is now impacting every community in this country, not just Lake and Riley, but look at Travis Wolf, for example, and what happened in Missouri. These horrific stories are popping up in every single city and state around the country. And it's not just the migrant crime. We see the relaxation of many of the enforcement rules. We see the insane story in Pittsburgh where they're not taking 911 calls between 3 a.m. and 7 a.m. People are concerned that this is going to impact them and their families. The other thing, too, Brian, is people just can't afford to live in Joe Biden's America right now. And you see the number of people that are either dipping into their 401ks or they're having to take up second jobs just to make ends meet is pretty scary. And I think that that stability that I referenced earlier, the prosperity that people felt good, is going to bring a lot of people back. But the one thing, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention this. You mentioned a couple of categories where the president, according to some of the polling, is trailing.
Yes.
But take a look at, in other numbers that I'm looking at, where President Trump is winning with independents by double digits, that he's narrowly leading in our polling with Latino voters, that Joe Biden is under 50% with African-American voters, and a good chunk of those are coming to President Trump. Many are saying they still haven't decided. So there's a reason, as you watch Joe Biden going around, whether it's talking to black voters, Latino voters, union voters, Biden's on defense because we're leading or making such historic gains with certain communities that they're scared. They're on the run right now.
Here's what President Trump said in his current situation, where he's looking at 91 charges now, I guess, 88 charges, and four separate indictments. Here's what he said and compared himself to.
Over the years, I love history. I study history. And I was always told that Andrew Jackson, as a president, was treated the absolute worst. He was just really lambasted. And I heard Abraham Lincoln was second, but he was in a thing called the Civil War, so you can understand that. But Andrew Jackson was really, really treated badly. In fact, his wife died during the process. I mean, a lot of people say she died because of the way they were treated. I mean, she was heartbroken and broken in so many other ways. And I heard that for years. And I look now, even last night I was saying it, I said, I don't care, Andrew Jackson or anybody else, nobody has, when you think of the fake things, nobody's been treated like Trump in terms of badly.
Your reaction to comparing himself to those two historic figures?
I think President Trump is a great student of history. As someone who's studied both of those presidents myself, we've never seen anything like this in human history, especially in American history. And Brian, they've been coming after President Trump since he came down the escalator. Think about through 2016, 2020, all through the presidency, what they're doing now, whether it's weaponizing all aspects of government, the justice system, the electoral ballot access system, the intelligence community, you know, Russia, 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 Ukraine, Ukraine, Ukraine. We've never seen anything like this. I mean, even censoring social media platforms to not allow the Hunter laptop story to be shared. Brian, we've never seen anything like this ever. I think President Trump's right. What's really concerning is that America is the last best place to go in the world. There's no other country that, hey, if America doesn't really pan out, we can go live somewhere else, or this place is going to be a rock of stability. I mean, this is it, Brian. And if we become a third world country where we're prosecuting our political rivals, it's a slippery slope. And in many ways, it's Biden who's attacking democracy and turning us into an authoritarian state.
John Kelly came out and said the president, former president, has a list of good things about Hitler. and love studying Hitler. What is the president's reaction? And Jason Miller, what's your reaction?
100% BS. I would use the full word, but I know this is a family program, and I might get the dumb button hit on me. Complete BS. Here's the part of the reason why we know that's BS, in addition to the fact that President Trump would never say something like that. John Kelly, if something like that were actually said, John Kelly would have quit that same day. There is no way that John Kelly would have stayed around if something like that had happened. So it's complete BS. It's made up. President Trump never said it, and John Kelly is lying. And he, again, for him to stay there and only now say something like that just shows that, again, he's part of that anti-Trump apparatus that's trying to swing the 2024 election.
I guess it was in Jim Sciutto's book on CNN. He said, well, he goes, he said the president said Hitler did some good things.
So complete BS. And I will tell you that with regards to that particular author and sometimes on-air pundit or host, I would say in all the TV interviews that I've done over the years on behalf of President Trump, that might be the TV anchor where I have to correct them most often because they get their facts wrong. In fact, I not infrequent anytime when I join him on his show, we have to say, hey, you're getting your facts wrong. You don't know what you're talking about. Obviously, I say it in a little bit more polite type format. I don't believe the book. I don't believe the comment. Okay. President Trump says that it's BS. And I definitely don't believe John Kelly, who has an axe to grind because President Trump dumped him and he wants to see President Trump lose. And I think, Brian, most of your listeners probably agree with that.
Jason Miller, thanks so much. Kicking us off 2024. We got 8 months to go. And we look forward to seeing both candidates out and about, and we'll see where it goes from there. Jason, thank you.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Carly Shimkus, the bottom of the hour. Your call's next, 1-866-408-7669. What's your app with TikTok? Where do you stand on this? We're going to bring that front and center because it could be in front of the Senate this as early as today. Don't move.
Covering this election year like no other, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. Listen, when we come back, I'm going to play some of the TikTok interview I had with Rand Paul, who seemed, if you think he was exercised about Anthony Fauci, he's off the wall when it comes to going to bat for TikTok, which over 300-plus votes in the House is unthinkable, especially this House. But overwhelmingly, since they didn't go rules to the Rules Committee, they needed two-thirds of the House body. They got something like 350. And one of the people later on in this show, Congressman Kat Kamick, one of the architects of the anti-TikTok bill, she's going to be talking about it. And in the beginning, Senator Schumer goes, yeah, we're not bringing that up in the Senate. Why? Because a lot of them are donors, a lot of friends are lobbyists. They don't want to deal with it. Now they're pretending it's freedom of speech. Really? For a Chinese-owned app? Freedom of speech? ByteDance? Just so you know, every Chinese company, no one acts independent. Best example, Alibaba. It was bigger than Amazon. And Jack Ma got too big. They basically put the guy in jail. ByteDance? Hey, we need that information on Americans and their interests. Give it up. They will.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Well, Senate would have to pass it. President would have to sign it. There would be court challenges. But if all that goes through and ByteDance does not divest, the principal impact would be on the app stores. So Apple and Google would not be able to distribute new versions of the app. They would not be able to maintain or update it. Eventually, the TikTok on your phone would turn into a brick. People would stop posting and TikTok would kind of go away. That's what happened in India when they banned it.
So that was Nicholas Thompson of Wired, former editor-in-chief of Wired, I should say. on CBS this morning. Carly Shimkus is here. Because a lot of people said, Carly, this is the number one issue in America. It's first story in the New York Times, Washington Post. Okay, so how do you ban it? Like, what do you do? And what also I read in the New York Times is that the whole thing with TikTok is they've created an algorithm in secret, ByteDance has, that allows them to give you exactly what you want. No one can replicate it. And if they sell it, the algorithm doesn't go with it. So it's just going to be another social media app. And the analogy was, it's like buying a Ferrari without the engine.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really interesting. I think that a lot of the news conversation surrounding this topic had to do with sort of that existential threat of China and it being a national security threat and a lot less about the logistics and the practicality of actually banning an app and what that would mean. And that's what that clip talked about, which I was interested in. I talked to Congressman Krishnamoorthy. He co-sponsored the bill. He's a Democrat.
Congratulations. You say his last name. Oof. I look at that name and I go, I don't even
know
where
well,
to start.
Well, you know, Todd was the one who said it first. And he has many virtues. And one of them is that he is the best prompter reader I've ever experienced in my life. He's like does a ballet dance with his tongue. It's just like this perfect little. Anyway, he said it a couple times and then I had to. And I succeeded, but I was scared. But anyway, I asked him. I said, you know, practically, if this passes the House, Senate, Biden signs it into law, which I think is also could potentially be a question mark, even though he's saying now because of youth vote and all that. But what actually happens if ByteDance doesn't divest? Does it just disappear from your phone? And he didn't totally answer the question, but he did say, and I thought that this was a nice little interesting nugget, that all the information that people have would be stored on a separate app. So I don't know what the separate app would be, but I think that's to calm concerns about losing videos and all of that.
Right. So, there'd be a way to archive it, I guess. So here's what they said. This Nicholas Thompson went on to say this. Cut 21.
Well, it's not just they have the data. It's the ability to influence them. Right. You can imagine China saying we would like the young people in America mm-hmm. to have a particular viewpoint and we're going to push that. In fact, one of the reasons this happened, I think, is because the Biden administration and the Democrats, who were kind of against the TikTok ban when Trump initially proposed it 4 years ago, saw public opinion, particularly among young people, shifting on the conflict between Israel and Hamas. And they blamed TikTok for that. They saw videos praising Osama bin Laden going viral on TikTok. And they said, Whoa. Is this good for American democracy?
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. And I also feel like there are very strange bedfellows on this thing where Donald Trump proposed an outright ban of TikTok when he was president. And now he's saying that TikTok is a national security threat, but also raising questions on if this ban should go into effect, because then it could prop up Facebook. And then, you know, and then you have President Biden, whose campaign uses TikTok, but he said that he'd support the ban. I mean, how do you parse through that?
Well,
there were 15. I printed it out. There were 15 Republicans who voted against it. A lot of them are big Trump people, like Matt Gaetz, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Greg Stubbe. And their concerns are all because it could open the door to government censorship, which I actually do think that I think that there's a legitimate argument.
So it's how you write the bill. But what it should be is this. Just like there were terror nations, we have we put the Houthis back on a terror list. Mm-hmm. Never should have left. I think there's got to be nations that are on a separate list that should be treated differently from France and Norway and England around the world. There's no doubt about it. If England came up with this TikTok, no one would have a problem with
right.
it. You go, okay, game on. Mm-hmm. Let's make Instagram better, Facebook better. Let's find something else that's going to Snapchat and make it and take a run at it. But it's all about the security. And the fact is, are people concerned enough when the bin Laden thing goes viral? And are you concerned enough with these Palestinians, anti-Semitic words coming out there? When Nasrella is praising the uncommitted votes in a primary, who is running Hezbollah in Lebanon, mm-hmm. when he comes out and praising the uncommitted votes in Michigan, and you see
Yikes.
That this pro-Hamas this pro-anti-Semitic behavior is out there. Now, why would China care about that? Because it creates derision
totally.
And division in America.
Yeah.
So if that doesn't bother you. Now, if people are on Facebook and they're fomenting this point of view, Americans fomenting this point of view on an American platform, If there's insidious behavior behind it, we can examine it. But when's the last time you knocked on Beijing's door and go, can you give me what are you guys really up to when it comes to this? And when it comes to voting, are we going to allow? I mean, you just saw it. Were you concerned, Carly, that a missive was put out to go and call your congressman if you have TikTok? And they said you couldn't really get onto the app unless you acted first.
Yeah, I know. That was a big thing. And boy, oh, boy, did those young people do what TikTok told them and called their congresspeople. And those congressional offices were flooded with people who've never been, I'm sure many of them have never been politically active before. Social media is so addictive, and TikTok is the most addictive form because all you do is just mindlessly scroll. And to your point about the difference between China and the United States and how China's using this app to undermine the U.S., it's been said before, but it keeps being repeated because it is true, is that TikTok in China is so different. It's an educational tool. And here it's somewhat like Instagram. You know, it's just it's
better,
social,
they say.
It's fashion and, you know, things that people want to see. And it just gets your mind into this, you know, mush that, you know, some of us are all victim to.
So the governments that have taken it off their state and federal devices, Canada, Australia, Great Britain, France, New Zealand. For India, they've outlawed 59 Chinese apps, including TikTok. It's been banned since 2020. They figured out what they're up to. Montana tried to ban it as a state. Texas has banned it on state devices. And many colleges have blocked TikTok on Wi-Fi, but the kids just go to digital. You know, they just go to the digital if they have that subscription. So I guess we're going to see where it goes. I don't know why. I don't know how Chuck Schumer does not bring it up for a vote.
Yeah. Well, what is that conversation going to look like between Joe Biden? I mean, this is clearly on his radar, obviously, and Chuck Schumer. And who's going to take the heat? I really wonder if President Biden would sign this. He says he is now. It's kind of easy to say that. But if you think about where he's struggling with the youth vote, and he's billions and billions of dollars to student loan debt to try and buy those votes, and then he's going to ban their favorite thing in the world. And you hear people already saying, like that one person that we've been playing on Fox News that said that if this TikTok ban goes through, it's going to impact how she will vote for the rest of her life.
Right. Yes. And I know that it's, and other people calling up saying they're going to commit suicide.
That's so sad. I don't know. I think it's a nuanced issue. And I do feel bad for the people who actually do make a living off TikTok. And I guess you can diversify, but it's easy to say that. It's easier said than done if you're making your whole living off TikTok.
Here's what Senator Josh Hawley said. Cut 7.
There's a reason that the Chinese Communist Party is so interested in TikTok. If this were owned by an American company or an American individual, group of individuals, that'd be fine. I mean, what needs to happen here is there needs to be a firewall between TikTok and Beijing, because the whole deal is all the information TikTok gets from Americans is available to the Chinese Communist Party. That's the problem. That's why it's a security threat. That's why they want to get into our phones so they can get this information on us. We need to put up a firewall. If they would sell TikTok, that's fine. If they won't sell them, then we're going to have to ban it.
And then didn't you say, Brian, that if TikTok or ByteDance, you know, the China people, they're never going to sell that sort of information? Or how did you describe it? You said it in the best way.
So what they said
is, it makes it somewhat impossible to do.
So what they said is the algorithm is located in five separate locations in Singapore, in Beijing, believe it or not, in a Mountain View, I think, California, and I think one other place. So they have this, and they knew it when they created it in 2016. They have a way, it sounds like AI, to anticipate what Carly Shimkus wants, not Brian Kilmeade. I got my own. You get your own. Now, it seems like those with algorithms are, but not like this. They zero in on exactly what you want. You're able to figure it out almost instantly and give you what you want. And because of that, they also find out more and more about America, about you in particular, and how to play, for example, if you're running for political office. What do the people in Minneapolis really care about? Well, now, not only do I know what Americans care about, I know what every American, 170 million, care about. And I got the profile on them.
Yeah.
And I can manipulate them. So let me see. Let's kill them with fentanyl. Let's find out how what they're thinking about emotionally, politically, spiritually, what their interests are. Let's get them that way. Influence who they vote for. Influence what they believe in.
Yeah.
Taiwan, how many anti-Taiwan stories or pro-Taiwan stories you think are on TikTok? That would be a fascinating look.
Yeah. I think that you just described the issue with TikTok better than any politician ever has.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
Is Carly in a good mood today? Were you surprised at this?
Brian, like, would you ever run for office?
Would I ever run for office? I don't know. Would you, if I needed a deputy or a lieutenant governor, would you, if I ran for governor of a state?
Yeah. Would you run with me?
Would you run with me?
As you're running me?
Would you be my Winsome Sears?
Yeah, man. It's the most impressive lady in the world. Absolutely. Right. Yes, I will be your Winsome.
But I don't want to run for an office I got to get rid of in 4 years. I mean, how weird is that?
I know.
You can't even run again.
I know. Isn't that such a strange thing about Virginia? Is that the only state that does that?
Right. We can be critical. We can't be critical about Virginia. We have fantastic affiliates.
That's not a criticism.
Right, I just got to make sure. You're not going to come out against Jefferson, are you? And Madison?
No.
All right.
We're just saying that their opinion of politicians matter so much that they should serve a second term, depending on how they vote.
It's Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Oh, it's absolutely a threat to national security. There are three ways it could be used against America's national security interest. One, all of the data. They know where all the users are. They can track individuals. They can track populations. You imagine a conflict with China? How useful would that be? Second, propaganda manipulation. You can imagine just putting a little push on the algorithm so news that's bad for Taiwan gets a little extra amplification. Or third, perhaps most likely, let's just make Americans a little more emotional, a little more angry. And you could do that through the algorithm as well. So there are legitimate national security concerns, and national security hawks are very pro this ban.
So I know you've been covering this, but this story's hitting hyperspeed. That's a solid theory.
Yeah, it is. And now I don't think that I should be your Winsome. I think that man should. So I will step down.
You're stepping down?
Yeah. I mean, that was a really good way of phrasing it as well. This type of stuff, though, it's obviously so true. And we're in somewhat of a cold war with China right now, which, depending on what happens with Taiwan, could, and God forbid, turn into some sort of hot war. So we got to do this now.
Let's talk about 2024.
Oh, okay.
Robert Kennedy Jr. With Neil Cavuto on his running mate, cut 27.
I really like Aaron because, our appeal is to young people. We're trying to make sure that young people are participating in the political process, that they have hope for America. We want somebody... The people who have run up the $34 trillion debt, which they're dumping on that generation, are all older people. And we want somebody young who's going to look out for that generation. Mm-hmm. Aaron Rodgers is battle-tested.
Your thoughts about this. Right before you went on, I looked at CNN. I said it was a repeat of Anderson Cooper from last night. Uh-huh. They did 10 minutes. You would think that Aaron Rodgers is the Gilgo serial killer.
Well, I know. There was a huge hit piece that CNN ran on Aaron Rodgers.
It's unbelievable.
I know. And that's kind of – it's ridiculous, right? Because RFK Jr. is not going to be president. I mean, to call him a long shot is being gracious.
He's running better than any third party.
Sure. Okay, great. But he's not going to be president. And so then because he mentions Aaron Rodgers, for CNN to take that and say, we're going to destroy this man's life now, is just a seven bridges too far. But yeah, they're all over Aaron Rodgers. But obviously because of the vaccine stuff, if we're being honest.
And they said that he came out and thought the Sandy killer, those were all actors. I can't wait to see his response to that because I know he likes conspiracy theories, but I don't think in a million years that's true. But they said they have two people that they know that witnessed it. But now he's brought back in. This guy's trying to get better. He's out in California trying to get back on the field. And RFK, to me, we're talking about it. But he's famous. He's not an unknown guy. Yeah. He doesn't need Ventura.
I know, this whole Aaron Rodgers thing feels very Michelle Obama to me. When people were like trying to make, could Michelle Obama run against Biden and be the Democrat presidential candidate? It's not going to happen.
Do you think it unnerves people that might be leaning towards RFK that he would even put this out there? Then make it seem like a cartoon or reality show?
No, because I bet you he is considering Aaron Rodgers. Well, so it's not a lie. It just feels a little bit unserious for my taste.
Right.
It's kind of funny. It's like a splashy thing to talk about. But, I mean, RFK Jr., he's been on Fox and Friends before. He's a very nice guy. I actually think that—
You liked him a lot. You talked to him for a long time.
Yeah, I was nervous to approach him. Did you see that? When I was—
Yeah.
I was like, gosh, I get so weird around, like, really
Kennedy's?
Famous people. Oh. No, not the—I mean, you could lump him in, but I get really shy. It's the only time I'm shy in my life.
Really?
Yeah, like, so when famous people come on Fox and Friends, I disappear.
Are you afraid they're not going to like you?
Well, there's always just a huge swarm of people around them, and I don't want to be another person. Like, I just don't want to be. I'm like, they have so much attention already. I don't want to add to it and annoy them.
So that's so interesting.
But anyway, I wanted to.
What about when you actually interview them? You can't be intimidated.
No, right. That's a different capacity because that's work.
So when Christopher Nolan was in, the producer of Oppenheimer,
disappeared.
Were you there?
I did not go into the green room.
See, I have the other way of going about it.
Well, because you're Brian, so you're the host of the show.
But I assume they wouldn't like me, but I don't care. I really do. I assume, especially since I came here, that most famous people will have an attitude, or they're all in.
Yeah.
Or they're like, I watch you every day.
And
they're
on the down low?
Yeah. but for the most part, I would think people here, like, reluctantly, and I don't care. With Christopher Nolan, I just find him endlessly interesting, but I do feel he was watching us. I do feel he did know what was going on.
Like, meaning he watches
Fox
and Friends?
He watched the show, yeah.
Interesting.
Or Fox.
Yeah, okay. Mark Wahlberg was probably the most famous person that's come on it recently. I wanted to meet him so bad, and I just stayed in my chair upstairs behind the scenes.
Is that unbelievable? Yeah. I can't believe that.
Because everybody's taking pictures and, you know.
But
I don't want to add to that and have them be like, oh, another.
Do you ever see those commercials where it's like, how to not be like your parents, and LL Cool J goes in to order the cold cuts,
yes,
and he's like,
yes.
Try to act cool around him. It's like, you can't do it.
Yeah.
Are you afraid you'll act uncool?
I don't know. I just get really shy. And, you know, it's the funny thing about that is, and I am not putting my, but if anybody ever comes up to me, I'll talk your ear off. You will be, if you say, hey, I watch Fox, I will talk to you for so long. You're walking down the street and I'm chasing after you.
Right, because you're a nice person.
I just want to be gracious.
Well, how long can you keep that up? I mean, come on, Carly.
Until the end of time.
All right, good. Fox and Friends first. Watch that woman.
Please do.
Yeah, and she really enjoys, she likes knowing that you're watching.
Absolutely.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Brian Kilmeade here, coming to you from Midtown Manhattan, but heard around the country, around the world, where I understand, just so interesting, Midtown Manhattan was called New York City, is also known as Port-au-Prince, New York. And Mayor Adams, in a shining sign of symbiosis with the travails of Haiti, brought that up yesterday. And he got huge, and he actually put it on Twitter, got huge pushback because it's never been known as Port-au-Prince, ever. New York, ever. And right by that whole country's in total chaos. So we're going to give them $200 million. Can you imagine this? $200 million. We can't get 4 cents for Ukraine. We can debate that. We can't help out, I guess, to the degree we want Israel. We can't even debate that. But now we're going to give $200 million at the drop of a hat to a country without a government, which is an interesting approach. Congresswoman Kat Kamick will be with us shortly. Josh Krasauer, Inside 2024, and Vladimir Klitschko will be joining me from Germany, the brother of the mayor of Kyiv, who is a longtime heavyweight champion, and I actually got in the ring against. Great guy. By the way, he's also a physical therapist. He got his master's and obviously PhD. So let's get to the big three.
Now with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's big three.
Number three. I don't think this ruling changes the type of evidence that the DA is going to be able to introduce, but it does knock out some of the charges. And look, it's embarrassing for prosecutors. It's a screw up by prosecutors when you bring a charge and then a judge throws it out before it even goes to trial.
And that is on CNN, their legal expert. Trump trials. Former President Trump is in court today in an effort to toss the documents case in Florida. The Georgia judge tosses 3 of the 13 charges on the President of the United States and 3 others on the other 18 being charged. Soon we'll find out the fate of Fonnie Willis and Nathan Wade.
Number two.
I know it sounds like hyperbole, but it's all in your hands. And you folks like you all across the country. A lot of you helped me in 2020, and we should make sure he was a loser. And we're going to make sure that happens again.
Man, he sounds exhausted, but at least he's out and about. President Biden touring battleground states, sitting for two radio interviews. It looks like he will not do the basement strategy because he's trailing Donald Trump in almost every battleground state. We'll discuss it.
Number one.
This will heavily influence on how I vote from today and for the rest of my life.
There are probably better matters out there right now than to be looking at, like, if we should vote for banning TikTok or not.
Try and talk to young people, like, in their districts or in their states.
There you go. TikTok on life support in America as the Senate is getting pressured to follow the House and put forth and force a sale or eventual ban if they don't sell. Some in America are going to bat for the popular app in the nation, and it is the most popular, casting aside American security and the threat of China. But not my next guest. Congresswoman Kamik joins us now. I believe, are you in Washington or back in Florida?
No, we actually were on our Republican retreat right now, so we're just outside of Washington.
You are in Greenbrier, which is beautiful, where we had an alternate government set in case of a nuclear bomb. Did they tour you through that yet?
Yeah, the bunker underneath the resort area, it's stunning. I mean, it's actually – it's pretty terrifying to think of, you know, that that scenario, but it is remarkable how they had a mock – Congress. They had a Senate floor, a House floor, the DCON, the MREs, barracks for members of Congress and their families. I mean, it was pretty staggering to go through there and see what that was set up for in case of an emergency.
Right. Yeah, so, I did a whole feature on it. It's on Fox Nation. You could look it up. Congresswoman Kamik, when you put forward, helped design the TikTok bill, did you expect 300 votes for it?
It's interesting. I was talking to colleagues last week because I serve on the Committee of Jurisdiction that this had to actually go through in order to get it to the House floor. And the conversations were very much a microcosm of what we would anticipate on the House floor. And as we started really dispelling some of the rumors and the myths around TikTok and getting through to people on why this is so important that they divest, that we have them break up with the CCP, the Chinese Communist Party, I started getting more confident about its chances in the House. And at one point I looked at the chairwoman and I said, I think we're going to have 350 votes on the floor. And yesterday we had 352 yes votes to force TikTok to break up with the CCP.
Do you think that that number will sway whether the Senate takes it up or not?
I think they have to. That number is staggering, especially in the dynamics that we have today. Of course, there's all kinds of interesting personalities in the Senate. I'm not saying that there aren't in the House, that's for sure. But in the Senate, it's a little bit of a different ballgame. But I think you're going to see Schumer, McConnell. I've seen where Ted Cruz, Tom Cotton, you have some very interesting bedfellows coming together who recognize the threat. And so just from the sheer fact that they recognize how important this is for national security. And sometimes I feel like people get a little dodgy on the national security thing. They're like, oh, they always want to say that. No, I wouldn't want my government having this type of information about me. I wouldn't want big tech having this type of access. Why the heck would we do anything to allow the CCP to have this type of access? So I think people are recognizing that, and it will get its vote in the Senate. The process might be a little bit unconventional, but I think it will get there.
So guys like Rand Paul are out. Marjorie Taylor Greene was out, and Matt Gaetz are out. Who would think that these guys would be trouble? Here is Senator Rand Paul, Cut 11.
I think when you're alleged of a crime, you have to be convicted of it. So you can't really take someone's property in our country without a conviction. That's in the Fifth Amendment. You have to have due process to take someone's company from them or force them to sell. But even beyond the Fifth Amendment, the First Amendment says that those 180 million Americans who express themselves on the platform have a right as well. There's already been a preliminary decision by a federal district judge in Montana that tried to ban this. There were two decisions under Donald Trump when he tried to ban this. They've all been found unconstitutional.
Your thoughts?
Oh, man, Brian. I have great respect for Rand Paul. I consider him a great friend, a dear friend, but I disagree with him on this. Let me just go through this. this is not a bill of attainder. We're not talking about content moderation. It's a 10-page bill. Anyone can read it. There's no mention of content moderation. What we're talking about is conduct, the conduct of which the CCP has engaged in stealing and harvesting the data of 170 million Americans and then using that data to commit fraud, crimes, et cetera. And we've seen that where they've used geolocation data against journalists writing stories that they didn't like. And I will also remind everyone that there is no First Amendment right to espionage. That is not, espionage is not one of the five tenets of the First Amendment. And the Fourth Amendment, where we have these warrantless seizures of data, where this app can go through your phone, it taps into your keystrokes, your financial data, your contacts, everyone who you're talking to, your emails, that is what they have access to. And that is, again, a violation of the Fourth Amendment. And again, I should remind everyone that the CCP, as a foreign adversary, they don't get to enjoy the constitutional protections and rights that everyday Americans do. That is what we're targeting here, the CCP, not Americans. And it's a very narrow, thoughtful, tailored bill to address the issue of a foreign adversary controlling a massive, massive information asymmetric warfare platform that will be used against us.
But I mean, is this about time to look at the bigger picture and just have a list of nations in which can never launch a social media platform? North Korea, Iran, Russia, China. Can we put that? Can we put that on a list so we can stop the next infiltration?
Well, and that's the thing, you know, it's those countries that you just named, those are in statute, in U.S. code, already defined as a foreign adversary. And so this bill is really just clarifying. It's not expanding any
government
powers.
So North Korea launches their version of TikTok. It would never get in the App Store?
Well, and under this bill, once this goes through, it sets a precedent that they would not.
So because we're going to list nations, like should we put England in a different category than Russia?
Well, like I said, foreign adversary is already defined in statute, and that includes North Korea, Iran, China, Russia. So that is already law. And I also reminded my colleagues as we were going through this process over the last couple of days, this is the exact same executive order, only a little bit more tailored. This one is a bit more narrow than the executive order that President Donald Trump put forward just a few years ago. So when I was talking to my friend Marjorie Taylor Greene about this, she said, you know, I don't think we should be focusing on this. I think we should be focusing on the Chinese buying our farmland. And I agree. But we can start with the 170 million pieces of real estate that the Chinese government owns right now, and that's in our phones. That right there is the immediate threat. And I think that it's not the one-size-fits-all answer to what we've got going on. We have tons of challenges, but we have to start somewhere, and this is an immediate threat.
Listen, I hear you, but you could also go right back and go for the Chinese land. I mean, why are we letting that happen? Why are we letting Russia buy Russia oligarchs buy buildings here? Is that still going on? So we should be able to you guys should be able to address that. And I think you can get bipartisan support. Anything you guys can do in a bipartisan way, I think, is good for everybody.
Yeah. And one thing that was frustrating was I'm an equal opportunity offender. I think that we should be addressing Meta and Google and their use of people's data.
Sure.
And we actually have a bill that's coming to the floor next week that does just that, that says you cannot sell data to foreign adversaries. You cannot use data in XYZ way. And so that bill is coming to the floor. I anticipate that'll also have a very strong cross-section of support across Congress. But these are the things that are frustrating for me that aren't being talked about more in the news. It seems like we're being distracted with shiny objects when there's really tough, challenging, and pressing issues. And so, I mean, I know I'm preaching the choir here, Brian, but you know as well as I do that, man, if it doesn't bleed, it doesn't lead. And really the really nefarious, scary things that are happening in our country go without very little coverage. So I'm glad and appreciative that you're covering this.
Absolutely. So a couple of things. What is going on with the majority in the House? I hear that you can't even get everybody to go to West Virginia to Greenbrier for your retreat, because you guys don't want to be around each other. We watch Ken Buck resign. We watch Kevin McCarthy resign. Mike Gallagher resign while you're in the majority.
And clearly, you can't give up the chances of being in the – even Democrats know that it's not a given they're going to be in the majority after 2024. So could you describe what's going on here without an experienced leader like Kevin McCarthy?
You know, I call what we're living through right now in American politics the era of angertainment. It is a business model for politicians where they stomp their feet, they give a fire-breathing speech, and they scream about how they're fighting the establishment, fighting the man, and fighting for you back home. And what they're doing is they're giving a speech to an empty chamber, to a C-SPAN camera, and then their colleague or their team is clipping it on the back end, and then they're sending it around and saying, give me $5 because I'm fighting for you. Now, that has become the new business model in Washington. Again, angertainment. I think that is the only way to describe what is going on, because it is all about keeping people frustrated and mad and outraged and giving someone to blame. And what that has done is create tremendous strife amongst Congress, and that goes on the right and the left. People, they're like, I saw what you said about this and that, and I'll have you know. And it's really just eroding the camaraderie that you need in order to get stuff done. And on top of that, I have, and again, I've only been in Congress for two terms, so not a whole lot of experience in Congress. But the first thing that I have been able to pick up on is that Washington, they don't want to solve anything, because that is where they derive their power. The power in Congress is derived from problems. And the minute that you solve them, you are giving away your leverage. And so there's real no incentive to solve anything. And so that just further erodes at the trust and the efforts to actually get something done. So my goal has been to really recruit people from around the country that come from backgrounds like mine. I was homeless at one point in time, commercial sandblasting, you know, working class family, mom was single parent. Like, I want to see real Americans with really interesting, you know, stories and real life experience in Congress with a hunger to do something and put aside the BS politics and do something for our country, because I don't feel that we're going to be able to survive if we keep going down this path.
Well, you definitely not going to stay in the majority, and it's going to be Speaker Hakeem Jeffries. And have what is the strategy? Because we know the RNC is not going to be much help. They're basically broke.
Yeah, that's been a real frustrating issue for us, is the fact that it's always just status quo, business as usual. One of the things that I'm doing is I am now the recruitment chair for the House of Representatives on the political arm. And the irony of that is when I ran for Congress, Brian, they did not want me. I came out of the largest primary field in the state of Florida. I had 12 at one point running against me. And I had multimillionaires, self-funders. And that's who Washington has always typically liked, you know, somebody who can write a check, big checks. And so they didn't want me. They were actually very resistant to my campaign. So the irony of me now being the recruitment chair is kind of funny. But the conditions that I took in order to do this job, I said, I want to do this my way. I want different type of people in Washington, people who actually are going to do the job they were sent to Washington to do. And then we need to chase the ballots. I've seen it too many times where they recruit these candidates and then they leave them high and dry. We're not doing that. We're going to go and we're going to put teams in every single competitive district in America where you have a staffer that all they do all day, every day is chase ballots. If it's legal to ballot harvest in that state, we're going to ballot harvest. If you're doing absentee, we're going to do absentee. If it's early voting, we're going to get our people out to vote, because we've seen time and time again where we lose just in New York 3. In that special, you know, 11,000 early votes were in and we lost by 11,000 votes. We have to start playing the same game that the Democrats have been doing. We have to start fighting fire with fire.
Right.
And I'm on a mission to do that.
All right. Congresswoman Kat Kamik, congratulations on the TikTok bill to get rid of it or sell it. We'll see if the Senate can keep the momentum going, and say hello to Jim Justice. The governor owns that place. Congressman, thank you.
Appreciate you, Brian. Have a good one.
Right. He might be the next senator from West Virginia. In fact, I can almost guarantee it. Your call's next, Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hear the ins and outs of the 2024 election right here. The Brian Kilmeade Show.
the fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
All right, let's go out to Steve in Brooklyn, New York. Hey, Steve.
Good morning. I have a far, far better idea on how to get the $200 million to Haiti now.
How?
Instead of the U.S. government spending yours and mine and your listeners' money, how about we go to Hillary Clinton and Bill
yes.
and ask them to cough up the hundreds of millions of dollars they collected when the earthquake occurred in Haiti? The United States population was directed not to donate it to Haiti, but to give it to the Clinton Foundation, which people did out of the goodness of their hearts. But they never sent it on to Haiti at all.
It's amazing how much they got away with and how they could sleep at night and how she's never scrutinized about that. And even when she ran against Barack Obama, how that never came up. So you're right, Steve. But I do not think by any stretch in the fundamentals of the story that the Secretary of State has the right to give $200 million to Haiti when there's no government to give it to. You can't just send $200 million over. I mean, you could send aid, send Marines, but you can't send money, send food.
The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I know it sounds like hyperbole, but it's all in your hands. And you folks like you all across the country. Because this is how I won the first time I ever ran. This is how we're going to win again. A lot of you helped me in 2020. And we make sure he was a loser. He is a loser. And we're going to make sure that happens again.
That is some of the dynamic work of TED Talk expert and featured speaker Joe Biden, who seems barely awake. But it is noteworthy that he is going to the battleground states, especially in the Midwest, trying to win over those uncommitted voters that sent him a message in the primary. So he's in Minneapolis. He was in Michigan. He's going to Pennsylvania. So he's not going to do the basement strategy. See how long he can keep it up. You know who is known as that? Josh Crasher. He's a Fox News Radio political analyst and joins us now. Josh, welcome back. Are you surprised the president stayed on the road most of the time since the State of the Union?
Yeah, look, I think this is the most active presidential schedule that we've seen on the campaign trail, and it's a sign that they're looking to capitalize on any momentum they receive from that State of the Union, a very energetic, if partisan, State of the Union, but certainly set up some contrasts with this White House and the Republican opposition. So we saw the president in New Hampshire earlier in the week. And by the way, New Hampshire usually isn't a swing state, but I think Democrats are a little worried about New Hampshire's three electoral votes and Michigan today and more battleground states to come later on this week. So this is a sign that the campaign has begun in earnest, and Biden needs to show that energy, show that he can keep up a pretty busy travel schedule because of the biggest concern by voters towards Biden is his age and ability to handle another 4 years in office.
It looks as though the poll I saw, he didn't get almost any bump from the State of the Union address. Does that surprise you?
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me. I mean, look, I think there were two things at play in the State of the Union. I mean, number one, he showcased that he was able to stay up late, give a speech that had some energy, even though he was yelling a little bit as part of it. But he showed he can, I think Republicans set expectations low, and then I think he passed the energy expectations to give a speech on one night that everyone's watching. On the other hand, Brian, it was a extremely partisan speech. And, you know, voters, if you look at just the general mood of the American public and where the most disaffected voters are, they don't like partisanship. They don't like people, you know, they may side with one side or another, but they generally like to see some element of bipartisanship or some degree of an olive branch right. being thrown out there. And look, that's a problem for both parties. But Biden, that was one of the more partisan speeches I've ever seen for a State of the Union. It could have been a campaign rally in Michigan or Pennsylvania. And I don't think that part of it played well with your average undecided voter.
I mean, they even chanted 4 more years. I don't remember that
before
in my life. So right now, if you look at some of the battleground states, and I'll bring you to we have Pennsylvania. It's Trump by 2. You know, he lost by 1 percentage point. I think it's pretty significant what's happening in Georgia and in Arizona. He is doing quite well in both those states. In fact, in Arizona, Trump is on top 43-39 with RFK getting 10%. I think that's pretty significant.
And in Georgia, I think he's been up about 5 points. But that's where Joe Biden's going to focus. But when he gets out there, is it all going to be Donald Trump is horrible, hates democracy? Or does he have a message, Joe Biden, besides finish the job? I mean, some people say he's going to talk about housing. Some people say, I don't know. I mean, some people are going to say he's going to talk about infrastructure. What are you hearing?
Look, he may talk about some of those issues. Those are not the top of mind issues for most American voters. It's the economy. It's immigration. It's crime. It's abortion for Democrats. It's certainly abortion rights. And I think you're hearing the vice president being sort of the emissary to the progressives on the issue of abortion this week. So, I think the rhetoric, though, is going to focus on attacking Donald Trump. I mean, how many times did Joe Biden say the words "my predecessor" in that State of the Union? 13 times, I believe. That was, again, you don't usually see that degree of partisanship even in an election year State of the Union. So, I think the playbook, we know the playbook for the White House isn't just talking about his president's economic policy, where he stands on border security and all these other issues that are front and center. It's going to be attacking Donald Trump. It's going to be, you saw the beginning of that speech where the president attacked Republicans and Donald Trump for, not being tough enough on Russia, for supporting, attack political violence on January 6th, and clearly making a nod to the former president. He brought up abortion rights and IVF also in that first couple minutes of the speech. So I expect a lot of attacks on those same fronts and on the campaign trail.
Here's what Joe Manchin said yesterday, not running for president, by the way. He said it on CNN, Cut 26.
Are you ready to endorse the president
not
of the United
yet,
States?
No, not at all.
Why not?
I've said this. I said the president is the president I knew that got elected because he was the person who can bring people together. And I still believe that. He has to come back to that middle. He's been pushed too far to the left. And I've said this. The liberal wing or the extreme conservative wing of both parties are extreme. That's not where mainstream America. America is 55% of us live in the middle, center left, center right. And that's where the president has always operated his whole political career. That's really what I want him to do.
So is that more than just a Joe Manchin vote, or do you think he speaks for other people you've spoken to?
Look, Joe Manchin is essentially a free agent. He can say, he's not politically beholden to anyone right now because he's not running for reelection and he's not running for president. And so I think that is a reflection of a lot of the frustration that moderates, that independents have, frankly, with our state of politics. I don't think this is just a Joe Biden thing. I mean, Brian, that all the retirements, Kyrsten Sinema, an independent moderate from Arizona, retired, decided not to run for reelection.
Romney
retiring. You're seeing members of the House like Mike Gallagher, who's been leading the charge against TikTok and one of the most effective lawmakers, I've seen in recent years, retiring. So the deal makers, the people who are, I don't even call them moderates. I would just people who get things done are saying, I can't stick around. I think that applies to Biden, too. I think that the partisan nature of that State of the Union was not a great look. And look, this is a White House that, at least in the first couple of years, went to the left. they had that Democratic narrow majority in the Senate, and they went full steam ahead. And that set the tone for relations between the White House and Congress to come. So, look, I think if you're an average voter, you're just sick of it all. Now, where that plays in the presidential election, I think is still to be determined. A lot of people don't like either of the Biden Trump. They don't like either of them. So the question is, where do those double haters end up voting in November?
All right. So we know the president's going to be the former president's going to be in court in Miami. Former president's going to be waiting to find out what's going on in Georgia in Fulton County, and this current president is not going to stay in the basement. And I'm just wondering, how active do your sources say Donald Trump is going to be?
Oh, I think he's going to be active on the trail. Though I will say that his campaign, if you look at his schedule, it has not been the most energetic campaign schedule. But we're going to get closer to November, and I expect as the race heats up, you're going to see a lot more of Donald Trump on the campaign trail. He's going to actually be in Ohio, interestingly enough, this weekend, campaigning for a Senate candidate he endorsed. Bernie Moreno, and then a big Senate primary coming up. So he's starting to amp up his political schedule. But boy, we're going to be spending almost as much time in these courtrooms over the next year as we are on the campaign trail, just because of all these trials and all these cases going through the docket. So that's going to be a big part of covering politics in 2024.
We'll see if it still continues to work for him like it did in the primaries. Josh, thanks so much.
Thanks, Brian.
When we come back, go out to Germany, where Vladimir Klitschko is. You know his brother is the mayor of Kyiv. You know he's a longtime Ukrainian and he's a longtime heavyweight champion of the world. One of the smartest guys you'll ever meet. What's it like in that war-torn nation, and what is it like just left America? Has he been successful? I think he went to Mar-a-Lago, too. Has he been successful in getting Ukrainians the aid they deserve? Don't move. Brian Kilmeade Show.
On the road to 2024.
They call it Super Tuesday for a reason. There's never been anything so conclusive. Trump is the presumptive nominee.
Rematch 2024 is on. Trump.
Oh, it's all going to work out. We're going to come out so good. I'm more popular than I ever was.
Biden.
Well, I'll
Democracy 24. Right here on the Brian Kilmeade Show. He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. Let's go over to Germany now. Vladimir Klitschko's there, longtime heavyweight champion, one of the greatest fighters of this generation, but known more for his Ukrainian heritage and how him and his brother literally fighting against Russia's invasion. His brother, Vitaly, is the mayor of Kyiv, and Vladimir's been there every step of the way. Came to New York briefly. Well, you saw him on with Dana Perino yesterday, but joins us now from Germany. Vladimir, welcome to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Good day. Thank you for having me.
How have you been holding up, Vladimir? What's these last 2 years have been like as we come up to 700 and plus days of war?
It is the most challenging fight, I would say. Not that is going 12 rounds, like in the championship fight in my past career as an athlete. This fight is in some way endless. So is the support. For some reason, you would think how much is enough and how much of the support that also was given by the so-called free world and recent support of the United States of $300 million. It does seem a lot, $300 million, but in the war, it's not, because the wound is deeper than that. And to fix it, it's going to be priceless. It is already priceless, because we are losing our best men and women on the front line, and we do need to finish this war and protect our country and protect the democracy and to protect peace in Europe. I would say that Americans would probably wonder and say, Ukraine is far away. What do we have with that? It's wrong to think this way, and we're spending so much money to support Ukraine. It's wrong. Can I tell you why?
Yep.
It is crucially important that in the geopolitics, there's going to be more democracy that we in Ukraine stands for. We chose 10 years ago, and the war and Russian invasion started 10 years ago with annexation of and breaking the international law, with annexation of Peninsula Crimea in the east of the country, with Lugansk and Donetsk in Donbas region. This war had continued with full invasion of the country in 2022, and we Ukrainians were pretty much counted out, and it was given us 3 days that we're going to fall on the Russian army. We stand already for more than 2 years, and this war is still going. Our resilience is not going anywhere, but we're relying on support and help in this area,
right?
An area of military support. And if we don't have peace in Ukraine, if Ukraine loses this war, we're going to lose the country. And
Russia's going to be stronger.
Putin's ambitions are bigger than just Ukraine. It has been said in his propaganda that he definitely wants to rebuild Soviet empire. It's going to be challenging for all European countries. if there is no peace in Europe, Europe is going to be weak. Weak Europe is going to be to weaken United States as well.
Eventually, you're 100%
on the world map.
Vladimir, let me tell you, I agree with you, but I want you to hear what some...
I'm going to finish in a second. The European Union has been greatest ally of the United States for a long time and the other way around. So we must stand together. We must have peace in Europe. And hopefully we're going to get it sooner or later.
Here's what a couple of Republican lawmakers are saying about supporting Ukraine.
There is nothing that will be served by sending another $61 billion to Ukraine. There's no path to victory. There's no end in sight.
I don't understand anything that I'm hearing. I thought that the rationale for us spending billions of dollars in Ukraine was military assistance. I thought this was all about stopping the Russians. But now it turns out, oh, no, that's not even the truth. Now it's just we're going to shovel money to their government bureaucrats. The American people have had it with this. This is absurd.
So that was Josh Hawley and J.D. Vance, two Republican senators. And I think he's responding to the fact that, you know, some of the money that they believe did not go right to the front lines. What could you tell us?
You just said it, that they believe. It's like a doctor making a diagnosis from far away. It's impossible to make right diagnosis if you're far away from your patient, so to speak, in medical terms. I believe that all the Americans that have been in Ukraine know it, see it, that we're capable of defending ourselves and capable of defending freedom in our country and in Europe. And we've been capable of withstanding and kicking back, actually, one of the largest world's army. We did it. We're continuing doing it with really little support. Well, you're going to say it's not that small that United States has been given weapons and financial support. But I have to say that for the United States, for the Americans, it's not lost of finances. It's going to be lost of trust. It's going to be lost of democratic principles, of democracy, of free men and women. Worldwide, definitely, I can tell that the dictatorship is getting together and work together closely, and the so-called free world is losing. We can't do that because the United States alone, standing outside, cannot function well on the long term. If there is no peace and democracy in Europe. Since the Second World War, it was clearly done, and we gave up in Ukraine as one of the largest arsenals after Soviet Union broke apart.
1994.
Beginning of the 90s. We gave up our weapons for sovereignty of our borders. That was broken by Putin's Russia in 2014 with the annexation of Crimea. So all the weapons that we gave up to Russia is attacking us today. In any way, we must protect peace in Ukraine. We must protect borders
right.
of Ukraine.
So Vladimir, we're talking to Vladimir Klitschko right now. I have one last question for you. That is, with people who say that the Russian, you guys have tried to suppress the Russian Orthodox Church in Ukraine and don't want to hold elections, what do you say to them?
Well, let's not mix religion. And we've seen that religion has been used in Russia a lot to try to believe people that we're evil. So Russians think that we're fascists and Nazis and we're evil. It's ridiculous to use religion in it. We're standing to survive. We're standing to protect our lives, and there's no other way but just protect ourselves.
Yeah, I'm up against a hard break, but Vladimir Klitschko, keep up the fight. Fully support you. Thanks so much for joining us.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here. We come to you from Midtown Manhattan, where Mayor Adams has called Mini Porter Prince. You see, he tweeted that out, and no one can find anything that he's referencing. He says New York has always been known as the New York Porter Prince. He's getting really big blowback on that. Ambassador David Friedman's going to be here at the bottom of the hour. There's so much anti-Israel information and leaks coming out of the White House now. They seem to be desperate to try to get the Palestinian Hamas Muslim vote that they are beginning to throw Prime Minister Netanyahu under the bus. Ambassador David Friedman will be with us shortly. And Michelle Tafoya in studio, host of the Tafoya podcast, longtime sportscaster, does every – you've covered every sport.
Just about.
Right.
No,
I know
no
football
hockey.
A lot.
Football a lot, basketball. I've even covered tennis and some golf and, yeah.
So the three things we're talking about. Talking about the Trump trials. Today he's going to be back in court. We're talking about the president, the current president, going to the battleground states. A lot of people thought he was going to be in the basement. He's been to Minneapolis, Michigan. He's going to Pennsylvania, giving speeches. You'll hear him running out of gas. And TikTok on life support. Number one story today in the New York Times. Talked about TikTok. Plus, over 300-plus votes of the House. It's going to put pressure on Senator Schumer, you would think, to at least take it up in the Senate. After all, he goes out of his way to rip China all the time.
And this is the best, the most evidence of ripping China that we need. Like, this is a Trojan horse. For people who don't know what that means, this is a wolf in sheep's clothing. TikTok manipulates people. And it does it by knowing exactly what you want to see, exactly what you want to look at. And then it manipulated people to call their congressman and say, you know, I'm going to kill myself if you get rid of TikTok. I mean, this is a scary algorithm that we don't know how to dissect. And China is using it to foment division, because really the only way this country falls apart is if it happens from within. And they're doing that successfully. And TikTok is a phenomenon. It's amazing. I think if they're not willing to sell it to an American company for market value, that just demonstrates the truth, that they don't want to because they want to continue to have this manipulative control over opinion.
This is the way I understand it. TikTok has an algorithm, and that algorithm was constructed in four separate locations, one in Singapore, in Beijing, actually in a place over in California. And they said that if TikTok sells, they will not going to sell the algorithm. So essentially you're buying a Ferrari without the engine. So good luck with that. You're not going to get, you know, you're not going to get Kevin O'Leary. You're not going to get Rumble buying that. There's something about that algorithm that people want. I want you to hear a little bit of the debate yesterday. Cut one.
The bill is not a ban. It forces foreign adversaries, including Chinese communists, to divest.
It's an attempt to make TikTok better.
Some of us just don't want the president picking which apps we can put on our phones.
They use geolocation data targeting minor children to then force them to call congressional offices. This influence campaign illustrates the need for this bill.
Which they did.
Right. Which they did. And now it's up to the Senate, right? And like you said, Chuck Schumer, this is an overwhelming vote. We don't see many of these, Brian. We don't see 300 plus votes in one direction or the other. This is bipartisan. It's amazing. Anyone who voted against it, I'd really question why. Don't talk to me about First Amendment. This doesn't stop anyone from speaking their mind. There are plenty of social media platforms where you can do that. TikTok is not the only one. And it's controlled by the CCP, and that's really the bottom line.
So I want you to hear, let's pivot if we can, to the other big story. They got swamped because of the testimony in the Robert Hur this week. Mm-hmm. And that is Ted Cruz had a roundtable. One of his key guests was Nick Saban about NIL. Why should people care? Name, image, and likeness. For the longest time, if you were caught taking any money besides your stipend, you lost your eligibility. Johnny Manziel goes to an autograph show, signs his own name in his own jersey, and loses, gets suspended, big controversy. Well, they've overcorrected, and the NCAA's got overruled by government. And now it's pretty much, hey, I'm 19 years old, I'm the quarterback of the Alabama Crimson Tide, and if you don't give me more money, I'm going to Stanford. They came up with more money. How do they get it? It's not necessarily the university writing the checks, boosters writing the checks. Nike wants to get you over to Oregon, where Phil Knight used to go. And he says, okay, you come over here, we'll get you a nice Nike deal. Where do you think this should go?
Well, you're right. They overcorrected. And this is so much a response in sports very often. Oh, the problem is here. Let's go way over here. And I don't know yet what the solution is, because the problems are multiple. You know, they've got these collectives where everyone's supposed to gain a little bit. My niece plays at the University of Minnesota. She's a basketball player. I don't think she's making very much money. But, you know, and then you've got complaints because, oh, the pretty gymnast is getting all the sponsorship and the softball player isn't. Well, this was never going to be a fair thing. This is capitalism, right? That's what this is. The best players, the superstars are the ones that are going to get the money.
Always has been, always will be.
Exactly. So I don't know how you complain about that necessarily. Go be better. Go compete. Go right. Be better and get the contract.
And should there be some type of limit? For example, should there be a limit for Division I athletes? Should there be an amount that you could get in interaction with the sponsor? So I'm a famous alum. I own 25 car dealerships. Right. I become almost a billionaire. Yeah. I want to give back to my school at the University of Texas. So I'm going to go and get that quarterback. Yeah. With the dimples of Matthew McConaughey. And he's going to start off at quarterback, and I'm going to make sure that I got a wide receiver, and I'm building up. So I'm going to outbid you for all these guys.
Yeah.
Is that what we want in college sports? Here's what Nick Saban said, the longtime coach, maybe the most successful coach in college football history. Cut 37.
The whole idea of boosters being able to contribute money to collectives and really which establishes a sort of pay-for-play model, which I don't think is in the best interest of college athletics in the future, nor the participants, the student athletes themselves. Doesn't enhance them creating value for their future like, you know, we all were dedicated to for many, many years to try to help young people be more successful in life, because you're actually going to college to create value for your future.
It's remarkable. Look, my late father-in-law was a college football coach at the University of Minnesota. My husband played baseball at the University of Minnesota. I mentioned my niece. I've got a lot of relatives at the University of Minnesota who are purists, who believe that what they got out of going to play for a college was an education. In some cases, their school was paid for completely. They've got this experience and a platform on which to play that then they could use to advance to the next level. Such a small percentage of these kids are going to get to the next level, right? Such a tiny percentage of all these kids playing. So it's going to be a tiny percentage that draws this NIL money. And coaches like Nick Saban are looking at this and having that presented to them. Mm-hmm. I'm a superstar quarterback. Give me more money or I'm going across the street.
And that's evidently what happened. They lost. Was it the championship game or the semifinals? I forgot what it was.
They lost in the semifinals, I believe.
Okay, so he loses. And since they were lined up at this door the next day saying, essentially, I got these offers or I'm going.
Yeah.
And he talked to his wife, and his wife says, why are you doing this?
Yeah.
Not why we did it.
That's pro sports. This is supposed to be college sports, right? There's supposed to be a bit of purity, but I think it's right. I think the toothpaste might be out of the tube.
Well, when you see 110,000 people at the University of Michigan, and they all paid their money to watch these football players.
Yeah.
And up until 10 years ago, they weren't getting anything except a college education and a stipend, mm-hmm. unless they were cheating. Was that fair? Did you ever say to yourself, a college education is not enough?
Yeah.
He's getting, because look at what you're doing for this school.
Look, when I started covering the Final Four, for instance, back in 1994, I saw players who were superstars, who were, UCLA was selling their jerseys, Tyus Edney and the like, selling their jerseys and making all this money, and the kids saw none of it. And I thought, there's got to be a middle ground here. There has to be some. But as you said, the pendulum got pushed. It didn't swing on its own. It got pushed all the way to the other side. And now I hope that they can find somewhere in the middle. But now that you started giving these kids all this money, the minute you start to try to pull that back, Brian, I'm afraid there's going to be major
regulations. I tell you, I think the coaches want regulation. I don't.
I agree.
I'm sure there's a handful that go, I have bottomless pit. I want everything. But I don't. For the most part, I want rules.
Yeah.
And you know, the thing is, too, what I like about it is more and more kids are going to stay 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of like that. You get to know these guys.
Right.
We got to know Patrick Ewing. He played 4 years. Right. And for the longest time, Coach K said, if you're not going to play 4 years, don't go to Duke.
Right.
He had to pull off that.
Yeah.
And now they're going to go, yeah, I'm making a ton of money at Duke.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
So here's more from Nick Saban. Cut 38.
Some of the goals and objectives of what we've worked so hard for the last 20 years to improve graduation rate, to improve health care for players, to have mental health care for players, all the things that we work so hard to improve on, we're going to start seeing slide in the wrong direction. Because we've created an environment that really does not promote personal development or that is going to create success for their future.
Yeah. he's not wrong, right? I think this has so much to do with why he decided to retire when he decided to retire. How do you recruit against all of this money? How do you recruit against all of this stuff that can come a young person's way? It's really tough to do. And we saw it first with the LeBron James, the Kevin Garnetts of the world, skipping college altogether and going straight to the pros, because how could you say no to all that money? And how can you tell a kid to say no to all that money? It's really tough to do. Well, now let's keep them here by giving them a ton of money. There's got to be some middle ground, but the university presidents have to agree on it as well. It can't just be the NCAA. It can't just be the government.
So, Michelle, how do we do this? I mean, we saw the reining in of Major League Baseball with the steroid era. Remember when Roger Clemens getting there and Sammy Sosa forgot how to speak English?
Right.
And then there was a big pushback to say, hey, you're going to lose, your antitrust status if you don't get your act together. And they pretty much did.
Right.
They got pressure.
Yeah.
So is Joe Manchin, who's leading the charge, who played college football, he's not an expert, but can you lean on the government to come up with a system that college sports is going to be able to flourish with? And I'll give you an example. My daughters played Division III soccer. Mm-hmm. So their football team does very well. I don't think there's a ton of money in their program.
Right.
They win Division III and then they go to they play Division I lacrosse and they go to the NCAA. There's not a lot of revenue there.
Right.
So everyone listening to us right now, it's not that there's a ton of money in it and the universe making a ton of money over it. Nick Saban's point was, our success in football funds swimming.
Yes.
Funds soccer.
Yeah, that's absolutely true.
You know,
true.
Funds, you know, yeah. Women's basketball, if they're not UConn,
right.
You know, selling
right.
out in Tennessee right. and South Carolina. So, you know, we were, and Lou Holtz said the same thing. He goes, we were supporting the non-revenue sports.
Yeah. No, that's absolutely the case.
And baseball probably doesn't get a ton.
No, baseball's getting cut in a lot of places. The teams are just getting dissolved. So, yeah, this is a problem with so many tentacles. There was one discussion about, let's just take college football and give it its own league and leave all the other conferences in place alone where, you know, so that Rutgers doesn't have to fly to USC to play, et cetera, et cetera. So let's just – football, they have the budget to fly across country. Let's raise football off of the normal college athletics landscape. Leave the rest alone. It's an interesting idea, and it might be a place to start, but then – you'll have college basketball complaining because that, too, is a revenue sport. So it's very, very complicated. It's way above my pay grade. But I do think you need a good variety of voices chiming into this argument. People with a lot of different stakeholders.
You need athletes.
Athletes,
you need
coaches.
You need administrators.
And you need alumni, and not just rich alumni.
Right. Past, maybe the Nikes of the world, the people that are big time by Gatorade, the big time sponsors. But I remember the first one that struck me when Jay Wright of Villanova won all those NCAA championships with men's basketball there. He said, oh, yeah, I'm quitting. I see where this is going. I quit. Because they like mentoring. Maybe they had too much power. But when a kid says, I'm not playing, I'm leaving. And Rick Pitino says, you know how many great Louisville teams and Kentucky teams I had? I didn't play my guys for 2 years. Now I got to go play them. They're going to leave.
Yeah.
So it's a tough thing.
It really is a tough thing. And you see it in it really worldwide. Young people, they never go on to college to play their sports. They're going kind of to these professional levels right away. And I see that could be, honestly, the end game here of what ends up happening, that there is a developmental. I think college football is the best developmental league for the NFL. I really do. But I can understand why these kids putting their health on the line, putting their injuries on the line, feel like they need to get something in return.
And just to complicate this a little.
Oh, thank you.
If I looked at Alabama and I saw athletes, not student athletes, I see AAA. I like that they're on campus.
Yeah.
That was the sell.
Yeah.
That these students chose that campus and are playing for that school and that legacy. The minute I see they become, well, they're getting paid so much, they're multimillionaires, and they're not really going to class. Graduation rates, when's the last time? Suspended for academic reasons. Have we even heard that?
I haven't heard that lately.
Is that even possible?
Yeah.
So if you are going to go this way, understand, part of the sell was I went to that school.
Yeah.
I was in his class or her class, Rebecca Lobo in those days. I remember they were one of us, and they just put on a uniform at the end of the day and won and killed it in a good way. So just understand that we're not going to be coming out. You're not going to get $110,000 for minor league football. Mm-hmm. If you make Michigan minor league football, you're not going to – no thanks.
Yeah. It's so complicated now. And like I said, I think the toothpaste is out of the tube. So unless they say, okay, we're going to have a rule that gets installed 6 years from now. So it's the Wild West for six more years. And then this is happening. So if you high school freshmen know this is coming
your way.
I'll take
two.
I don't think we need six.
I don't think, yeah, because it'd be absolutely insane.
No, it's already insane.
Right. And the players have more power than the coaches. They had zero power.
Yeah.
And the pushback that Lawrence Jones on the set the other day is, really? Why is Nick Saban complaining? He's got a $100 million shoe deal. You know, he gets $100 million and he's saying, well, I wish these kids would be like they used to be. They just wanted a role model.
Yeah.
Well, these kids help you get that deal.
That's exactly. I mean, this is a really tough and complicated. It's a power issue. It's a money issue. It's a pride issue. There's a lot in there that makes it really complicated, Brian.
Michelle Tafoya, when can we see you again?
Anytime. You let me know.
No, on the channel. Are you doing Outnumbered?
I'm doing Outnumbered in like an hour, right?
All right,
something like that.
We'll let you take that.
Okay.
Go to Outnumbered and then stay away from Gutfeld. He's nothing but trouble.
I was there last night. It's too late.
Oh, damn. Back in a moment.
Expanding your knowledge base. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Musher Dallas TV making history as the first six-time champion in the annual Iditarod Trail Sled Dog Race crossed the finish line in Nome, Alaska after 9 days, 2 hours, 16 minutes, and 8 seconds in the wilderness. Overcame a two-hour penalty delay, Casey, for failing to properly gut a moose that he killed on the trail. But he won just over $55,000 for finishing first. Credits his team of dogs for the win.
Excuse me? If you see a moose, you have to gut him?
Well, I guess in the Iditarod, right, we cover all sports. So the man who won, he still won, even though he was penalized 2 hours because he didn't properly gut the moose.
For more on that, let's go to correspondent Eric.
I believe you're allowed to kill the moose if it's an immediate threat to you or your dogs. But then you still have to properly, you know, field dress the body.
What is the proper way once you kill a moose to dress a moose?
Apparently, once they gut it, then rangers will come along and collect the meat, and then they'll pass it out, you know, amongst the community so the animal isn't wasted. So apparently this guy didn't do a very good job gutting his moose kill.
And it cost him 2 hours.
Yeah.
But he still won.
And he still won. So, I mean, number one, who makes up these rules? I mean, I thought instant replay was a leap. How did they, like, figure in proper gutting of a moose should you kill one en route?
I think you need to go to Alaska and find out.
Right. It'd be very interesting. Did the moose attack him? Or was he just in the way? Did he not want to move?
You know, we can do some more research on that. Threatening his dogs.
I mean, threatening the dogs. Plus, is it a male moose?
Does that matter?
Antlers. Right? And do you know, Eric, do female moose have antlers?
I believe they do.
Oh, there goes that.
From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
People on all sides of this war are turning away from a two-state solution, including Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who in recent weeks has said out loud repeatedly what many have long suspected by outright rejecting the idea of Palestinian statehood and sovereignty. As the highest-ranking Jewish elected official in our government and as a staunch defender of Israel, I rise today to say unequivocally, this is a grave mistake. The only real and sustainable solution to this decades-old conflict is a negotiated two-state solution.
So Chuck Schumer, the most prominent politician, Jewish politician in America, the majority leader of the Senate, came out and just said that this morning. He is now calling also for there'd be elections in Israel. He wants, as the president obviously wants, Netanyahu out. Should we really be calling for elections in another country? Ambassador David Friedman joins us now. He had that position under Donald Trump, President Donald Trump. Your reaction, Ambassador, to what Chuck Schumer said this morning?
Hi, Brian. I'm just disgusted. I mean, I don't even know
where to begin. First of all, I was a relatively high-ranking Jewish public official too, maybe not as high as him. But I can tell you, this Jew does not in any way subscribe to anything he just said. I mean, he just said, to put this in, put this in context, he says, number one, that the Palestinians should be rewarded with a state after having committed the greatest atrocities against the Jewish people since the Holocaust, in a world where 80% of the Palestinians right now not only support Hamas, but we're thrilled, we're exalting the attacks of October 7th. So, somehow Netanyahu should be criticized for refusing to give to these neo-Nazis the right to a permanent piece of land from which to continue their assault against the Jewish people. Okay, that's not what I would consider to be, a pro-Jewish remark. I don't care, whether or not his parents are Jewish. He's an embarrassment right now, as far as I'm concerned, to the Jewish people for making that comment. It is despicable. The second thing is, look, Netanyahu is in the middle of a war. Eventually, there'll be elections again in Israel, and the Israelis will pick their leader, and maybe it'll be Netanyahu, maybe it'll be somebody else. Whoever that is, the United States should support. But right now, he's in the middle of a war, right? And he's fighting a war on multiple fronts, and he's fighting for the safety and security of an entire nation.
Yep.
And about 80% of the people of Israel actually support what Netanyahu is doing vis-a-vis the war. Whether they agree with policies or not, maybe something different, but they agree with how he's running the war. And in the middle of this war, and in the middle of the fact that he's got the support of his nation, this guy gets up from the well of the Senate and says there ought to be regime change in Israel. How about regime change among the Palestinians? How about regime change among these people who are cutting off babies' heads and murdering children and raping women? How about there should be some regime change? Not our strongest ally in the region, not Netanyahu, who's trying to fight a war to protect Israel from obliteration. I mean, I don't even know how to process these remarks that he made. It's so offensive to me, as someone who loves Israel, someone who loves America, someone who's Jewish. I don't think I've ever been this upset. Right. With the comments of an American Jewish leader.
Samantha Power bragging yesterday that she gave Benjamin Netanyahu a piece of her mind about the way they're conducting this war in Gaza, and they better do a better job not hitting civilians and children.
Samantha Power can't shine Netanyahu's shoes. She is, a political hack who voted against Israel and betrayed Israel at the United Nations on the orders of her boss, then, Barack Obama. Netanyahu is fighting a war. He's fighting a war against people who have no respect whatsoever for human life, who are hiding behind civilians, whose entire goal is to maximize, not minimize, but maximize civilian casualties to gain world opinion. And she's falling into, and she's criticizing Netanyahu. Look, Netanyahu's not perfect. I mean, there were many failures that resulted in this war. And, at some point there'll be a reckoning and people will figure out, the extent to which he bears responsibility. But right now he's defending the country and she's lecturing him, and Schumer is lecturing him. It's just despicable.
Here's what Bernie Sanders said, also Jewish.
You can't beg Netanyahu. You got to tell him if you want any money, you got to change your policy. Allow the trucks to come in to feed the children. And by the way, in terms of politics, which is secondary to my mind in this issue, the truth is, whether you're a conservative Republican or a progressive, you do not want to see children in Palestine starve to death. So I think it's good politics and it's the moral and right thing to do.
Hold back weapons unless you make sure they don't go into Rafah, number one. And number two, allow more aid to get in there.
Yeah, I mean, it's another Jew offering a classic anti-Semitic trope. You want our money, you got to do what we say. As if, if you threaten Netanyahu with money, somehow, he'll be likely to follow your path. Look, there's not a single Israeli who wants to kill a single Palestinian civilian. There happens to be plenty of food, on the Gaza Strip. There are 20 bakeries that are baking 24/7. The problem with it is that all of the food, all the food trucks are being commandeered by Hamas because they still have a presence in Gaza. And the only way to liberate the Palestinian people, to get them food, to get them shelter, to get them back to health, is to get rid of Hamas, because the enemy of the Palestinian people is not Israel. It's Hamas. And we all know that. I'm in Jerusalem right now, and everybody in Israel knows that. And frankly, Schumer knows that, and Sanders knows that. But, you know, their politics tells them that they have to somehow placate their woke base. They have to, you know, solidify their votes in Dearborn, Michigan, and they have to take these positions, which are really, really, you know, so hostile to Israel at its most dire moment, at its real hour in need. These people, Schumer, Sanders, Samantha Power, they are betraying the state of Israel.
And what is the number? So right now we're looking at Hamas's communications division telling us 30,000, mm-hmm. mostly women and children, have died. What number do you believe is correct?
I got to tell you, I'm not going to venture a guess. I don't know. I mean, I'm not, you know, it's somebody will figure it out one of these days. But I think I would look at it this way. Let's just assume they're right. I mean, if they're there's no way they are understating it, right? I mean, that's for sure, right? So whatever number it is, that's the absolute highest end, and they're probably overstating it by a significant amount. But if you look at the fact that, you know, probably about half of the people that have been killed have been Hamas terrorists, so the ratio, let's say, of terrorists to civilians is about 1-to-1. People who have studied other wars, including wars in which America has been involved, including wars, you know, in the Middle East where America has been involved, the ratio is like 1-to-8. Like every target accompanies with it like 8 civilians. And here, you know, it's like 1-to-1. Every target, you know, there's – so it's the statistics compared to other wars shows that Israel is going through, you know, real efforts to minimize civilian casualties. And by the way, you know, you want to get these refugees out of harm's way? No one's putting pressure on Egypt. They can open up the Sinai. It takes like a 6-by-6-kilometer stretch in Sinai, which is nothing. You could build, you know, temporary housing very quickly for like 1 million people. You know, but no one's putting pressure on Egypt to take refugees. No one's putting pressure on Jordan. No one's pushing pressure on Turkey to take refugees.
They don't want the Palestinians.
During the Syrian, during the Syrian civil war, 5.5 million Syrian refugees were taken by the world. But nobody wants to help Israel here because they love this idea of civilian casualties. It helps, you know, create the popular antagonism towards Israel. So, you know, Israel's in a very tough spot. They're fighting this implacable foe, this brutal foe. And you know what? The quicker they get the job done, the quicker they can rebuild, the quicker they can, you know, support the Palestinian civilian population. And all that Schumer and Sanders and others are doing, they're empowering Hamas. When Hamas listens to this, right, because they know that they can't defeat Israel militarily. So what they're trying to do is to see if the war will come to an end while they still have a few battalions left. Like they still have 2 or 3 battalions in Rafah, right? If they can hold those battalions, if they can keep, you know, their leaders alive, if they can keep some money, it'll be a massive victory, the way terrorists, you know, keep score. Right. We should all be petrified of that, because if they win, you know, this is going to be the template all around the world for terrorists to commit atrocities and take hostages. So instead of, you know, saying to Hamas, this is what I think, you know, people say to me, what would have Trump done? He would have done something very simple. He would have said, Israel, you just got attacked. You just suffered a brutal blow. Fight back. Eradicate this enemy and do it as quickly and decisively as possible. And he wouldn't have had to do anything else. And you know what? That would have created a much greater likelihood of a better outcome.
To build up on that, Ambassador, over the weekend, last weekend, I heard that a hostage for prisoner swap was all set to take place. And then as soon as they saw the red line being announced by President Biden and how there was going to be hell to pay after his State of the Union address and he was going to have a come to Jesus moment, they said, wait a second, there's going to be pressure on Netanyahu. We don't have to give this good a deal. And they pulled out of it.
Exactly. It is gross incompetence by the president of the United States. I mean, it is negotiating 101 that this guy has flunked, you know, with his ice cream cone in the shop saying, we're going to have a deal in a couple of days. You know, as soon as he says that, Hamas says, well, you just empowered us to make the president of the United States, the leader of the free world, either a hero or a liar. We now can control that based upon his stupid comment in the ice cream shop.
Ambassador,
they are – Yeah.
Just real quick, when I talked to Netanyahu 2 weeks ago on television, he said he just was handed, he's about to be handed a battle plan that would show, have a corridor, a humanitarian corridor to get the innocent people out of the way so they can get to Hamas.
Yep.
Do you, from what you understand, has that battle plan been signed off on? Have you heard anything about it?
Yeah, I don't think it's been signed off on yet, but I think it's still in the works. I mean, I think they are taking it very seriously. They're going to go into Rafah. I mean, they have no choice. If they don't go into Rafah, Hamas wins the war. And so they'll do whatever they can to placate America, probably do much more than they need to do and probably put more soldiers at risk. But they'll do that because if they don't go into Rafah, Hamas is going to win the war.
Well, it must be. It's so frustrating because it's clearly who the bad guys are. And somehow this got reversed. You know, it also plays into my other main story, and that's TikTok. TikTok is fomenting this rage in our country. And their number one subscribers are the bracket of 16 to 25. And if you want to know where this pro-Palestinian, anti-Israeli rhetoric comes from, it is from that app. And the only reason why it's being done and works to China's benefit is if America is divided, that's a good day for them.
Yep. There's no question it's all being manipulated. I think the content is like 100-1 against Israel on TikTok.
Would you go back if Trump wins?
If he asked me and we talked about it and had a good understanding of how I could help him, I sure would, yeah.
All right. Ambassador David Friedman, thanks so much.
Thank you, Brian. Good talking to you.
All right. Good. This guy really knows the region, understands the stakes. All right. So when we come back, I'll be able to finish up with a few of your calls. Also, keep in mind, April 27th, Henderson, Nevada, I'm going to be on stage with the new tour, History, Liberty, and Laughs, on stage, talking about my books, talking patriotism, giving an idea of what's happening in the news, and having great fun. And we bring great moments in history to life in a very fun, unscripted way. Don't miss it. BrianKilmeade.com. VIP tickets still available, too. Don't move.
Want even more, Brian? Download the podcast at BrianKilmeadeShow.com. Every episode, exclusive interviews on demand. More of Kilmeade coming up. A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, welcome back. Got a few more minutes here. And just to go over some other things I have not been able to get to. We talked about 2021 and we talked about what's going on with TikTok. And even though the majority of the country is not for banning it, it's because some people are doing legitimate business. Absolutely. But would it, and 34% say don't ban it, 31% say ban it. I think the more people get educated on it, the more they're going to lean towards it. Number two is that's up for Instagram to step up. I was talking to a couple of so-called influencers on TikTok today, really concerned about losing their living. Number one, if you're an influencer, you got to be kind of flexible in your career path because that didn't even exist 5 years ago. Number two, you can monetize Instagram. You can monetize Facebook. They'll have to step up. There's always a chance in the next 6 months. You'll have 6 months to start to begin to look for other venues. And if there's somebody smart like Rumble, if somebody smart like Truth Social, Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, they'll step up and try to fill the gap. And that's what I think. And that's where I think we'll be heading. The other thing to keep in mind, too, is Bernie Sanders is pitching something that some people in the short term might think is pretty good, that think is terrible. He wants a 32-hour work week where you get paid exactly what you're getting paid. That's so anti-American and typical of every socialist. If they forced me to do a 32-hour work week, I would get a job on top of that. So now you'll have more time to spend more money on the same salary while working less. If you take Bernie Sanders up on his offer and Mr. I forgive your loans because I want your votes, Joe Biden goes for that, all we will have is a country going in reverse. It should be just the opposite. How hard can you work? How productive can you be? How fulfilled can you be in your job while having a balance in your life? Back to TikTok for this last moment. Nicholas Thompson had some really good points. He was a former editor-in-chief of Wired, and he was on CBS. And he talked about other people, other sites being worried that they'll be marginalized too because maybe they're against the current president, the climate, the party in power. Truth Social, for example. Cut 22.
And the other social media platforms, it is so interesting because if you think about the other economic impacts, YouTube will gain a lot of users, but Google will have to pull the app and will actually potentially be leading the legal fight. Mm. So you can see Google, which owns YouTube, being extremely conflicted and a lot of people meeting with a lot of lawyers this morning.
That is fascinating. I mean, there's a lot of things going on. Here's more. Cut 21.
Well, it's not just they have the data. It's the ability to influence them. Right. You can imagine China saying we would like the young people in America to have a particular viewpoint and we're going to push that. In fact, one of the reasons this happened, I think, is because the Biden administration and the Democrats, who were kind of against a TikTok ban when Trump initially proposed it 4 years ago, saw public opinion, particularly among young people, shifting on the conflict between Israel and Hamas. And they blamed TikTok for that. They saw videos praising Osama bin Laden going viral on TikTok. And they said, whoa, is this good for American democracy?
So what Gordon Chang said, who's an expert in the area, born in China, said allowing TikTok in our country is like allowing 170 million spy balloons because there's 170 million users. It's hard to believe this. In 2016, they roll out this algorithm. We've never seen anything like it. Suddenly, I understood Facebook wasn't hot for young people. I thought Snapchat was the hottest for young people. I heard the most interesting was Instagram. But next thing you know, it's solid TikTok. And I'm thinking to myself, what's that about? And then all of a sudden, you see the news feed. So if you're China, you're killing us with fentanyl. You're trying to intimidate us out of the China Strait and away from Taiwan. And now you're trying to find out what moves us, what operates us, what moves us emotionally. What do we care about? And then take over the news feed while manipulating us. Think about it.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network. Subscribe and listen to the Trey Gowdy Podcast. Former federal prosecutor and four-term U.S. congressman from South Carolina brings you a one-of-a-kind podcast. Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.